Once every three years, in the Sunday readings, we hear the story of Queen Esther. Esther who saved her people from annihilation. But we don't get to hear the whole story. We get to hear these little chopped up pieces. And by the time you get done reading just that portion of it, you're like, I have no idea what is going on. I can't figure out the players, and I can't figure out this story, and I don't know why it's in there. But Esther is an important story for us to hear, especially right now with everything that is going on around us. Because Esther is one of the most powerful women in the Old Testament. It is she who saved her people, the Jews, from being annihilated after they had been taken into slavery or taken into exile in Persia. So let me explain a little bit of this story, and then it will make more sense to you. And then it will make more sense why we need to hear it today, right now. This is the story of the Jews after they had been defeated by the Persians. The king in this story has a very funky name. He's also known as Xerxes II. He ruled 127 provinces. Persia was the big bad boy of that area of the world. The Jews had been conquered and had been taken off to Persia in exile. The king, Xerxes, had a queen, and her name was Vashti. The king decided he was going to throw a party. And this will make every woman in this room cringe. A 180-day feast to celebrate how rich Persia was. Can you imagine having to entertain people for 180 straight days? On the 180th day, the king decided that his wife, Vashti, who was beautiful and of whom he was quite proud, should appear before all the people at the feast, wearing apparently only her crown. Nothing else. And this is when she drew a line in the sand and said, enough is enough. I am not going to do this. I am not a plaything to be displayed before all of your people. Well, the king is so embarrassed by what happens, by her having the audacity to claim her own dignity, that he gets rid of her. We don't know if he executes her or sends her into exile. The odds of doing anything but killing her are very low in that day and age. So now he doesn't have a queen, and he's been embarrassed by everybody. So the feast ends, and he needs to have a new queen. So his number two guy, the prime minister, as it were, of Persia, says to him, well, we got to find you a queen. So they send word out to 127 provinces and say, send us your best, most beautiful virgin. In one of those provinces, there was a young woman whose name was Esther. She was Jewish. She was an orphan. Her uncle Mordecai had taken her into his house and had become her hunkah father and had raised her up. The king's men came and saw her and said, woohoo, we want that one to go to the queen, to the king. So she is taken off along with 126 other young women, and they are put in the harem, and it goes on for, I don't know, 6 months, a year, 18 months, something like that. At some point, the king decides that she is the most pleasing. So he makes her his queen. So now Esther, who is Jewish, but oops, she never told Xerxes or Haman, the prime minister, that she was Jewish, becomes the queen of Persia. Her hunkah father, Mordecai, is hanging out at the palace gate every day because he wants to hear word of how is his hunkah daughter doing, right? While he's there, he hears two men plotting to kill the queen, the king. So he gets a message somehow into Esther, now the queen of Persia, and says, these two guys are going to kill the king. So why don't you go to him and tell him this? So she does. And she does it in Mordecai's name. And says, Mordecai has heard this, and the two bad guys are caught and executed, and the king is, woo, their life is good. Meanwhile, Haman is not happy with having all these Jews, thousands of Jews, in those 127 provinces. So he goes to the king and says, they all need to bow down before you and before me. And the king, who's not the brightest apple on that tree, says, okay. So they issue a decree that everybody in the kingdom has to bow down. Well, Mordecai, hanging out at the palace gate, is like, I'm not bowing down to you. I bow only before God. And this sets Haman into a frenzy. So he goes back to the king, takes 10,000 pieces of silver with him, and says to the king, these Jews, we got to get rid of them. They're terrible. They won't bow down. This is an insult to you, O emperor, as you are. And I told you, remember, the king is not the brightest apple on that tree. He's like, gosh darn, you're right. So he issues a decree that on the 14th day of the month, all of the Jews in the entire empire are going to be slaughtered, and the people who do it can take all their belongings. Let's just get rid of those people, because they won't bow down before me. Well, Mordecai hears about this, and he's really upset, so he sends a message to the queen, and he says, you got to step up. You have to save your people. And she's like, wait a minute. Whoa. If I do that, he'll find out I'm Jewish. And then he'll kill me. I'm just a girl. What do you want me to do? And Mordecai says, who knows that but for a time such as this, you are the queen. You have to save your people. So she gathers up her strength. And she decides to go to the king. Now, you can't go into the king's presence unless he summons you. Just walking into his presence on your own is enough to get you executed. But she was beautiful. He really liked her. So she comes in and she requests that the king and Haman come to a private dinner. So she hosts this dinner and the king says to her, what's your request? What's your petition? She says, why don't the two of you just come back for dinner the next night? Haman is feeling really good. He's like, it's me and the king. Oh, man, am I important here or what? He goes out the palace gate, and there's Mordecai sitting right there refusing to bow to him. And Haman loses it. So he and his 10 sons get together, and they build a gallows, a really tall one, so they can hang Mordecai high. Now, remember, this edict is still out there. Then in a couple of days, all the Jews are going to be slaughtered. So they have the second night's dinner. And the king, who loves his queen, says to her, what is your request? What is your petition? And that's when she tells him, I'm Jewish. These are my people. I ask that you give me my life. That's my request. And I petition that you save the lives of my people. And the king is really confused. He's like, wait a minute. And they have the discussion, and they talk about Haman, and Haman is now really upset, and the king's like, who's threatening you, all of your people? And Haman, she says, it's Haman. This man right here is going to do this. And the king, not the brightest apple on the tree, decides that he's going to rescind this edict, and now Haman is the one who's going to get hanged. And because it was Mordecai that had saved his life, Mordecai now becomes the prime minister. And the first thing he does is issue an edict saying nobody lays a hand on the Jews. So that's the story. And see, we only get this much of it. Esther speaks more words in the Old Testament as a woman than all of the other women in the Bible combined. This is a really important person. And we get this chopped up version of it. And the key to it is Mordecai saying to his Hunkah daughter, who knows, but for a time such as this, you are the one. We are living in a time such as this. There is no way that anybody here has not heard what's going on in Washington, D.C. And I'm telling you, everyone here knows either has a personal story of having been, as a woman or even as a man, attacked, or we know somebody in our family who has suffered. As a result of Supreme Court hearings, we have women all over this country and some men who are all saying, this is why I didn't report. This has happened to me. And the pain that is pouring forth is incredible. We live in a time of immense public pain. And at a time such as this, we are the ones who are called to stand up, to speak, to listen, and to seek justice. At a time such as this, with this much pain, this is our job. This is not a sermon about the Supreme Court nomination. I have lived in my life, I believe, through 18 Supreme Court nominations. I think I'm old enough to go back 18 of them. And some of them I've liked and some of them I haven't, and there's nothing I can do about it. And I generally just say, oh, well. Okay, I'm not the person who does the appointing, and I have to live with what the Supreme Court does. And in my life, it's been radically conservative and radically liberal and somewhere in between, and that's just the way it works. I am talking about the pain that is resulting from these hearings. I'm talking about Chris Wallace, news anchor and commentator on Fox News, admitting on Thursday afternoon that after Dr. Ford testified, his two adult daughters came to him and told him what had happened to them in high school, and he had never known. I am talking about women publicly writing, talking on television or radio or on social media, that this has happened to me too. I am talking about a time such as this where there is so much pain that has been laid out in front of us. And if we, as followers of Jesus, committed to living lives of love, do not respond to this pain, I don't know when we would. For a time such as this. When I was 10 years old, my mother divorced my stepfather. We were Roman Catholics. This was not done in 1970. I became an instant pariah. All of my family did. When I was 11, we moved from the outskirts of Chicago down to Florida because that's where her older brothers and sisters lived, right? So there would be family around. Very typical thing. One of the family members was an uncle by marriage, and he loved baseball, and so did I. So every single day during the summer, he took me to the ballpark to watch the AAA team for the St. Louis Cardinals. And it was great for a buck. We could go and see a game and sit right behind the home plate. We could get a hot dog and a soda for a buck. I mean, it was fabulous every day that summer. I loved doing this. One day, my mother came to me, and she said, I need to talk to you about Uncle So-and-so. Has he ever done anything? And I'm like, well, Mom? You know, at 11, what girl wants to talk about the birds and the bees with their mother, right? Same thing with boys. You don't want to talk about birds and bees with your mom, with dad. And I said, you need to know. Uncle so-and-so has molested darn near every woman in this family. He molested me. Has he ever done anything to you? Because I am not comfortable letting you go to these ball games. And at first I wouldn't tell her. But eventually I did. And I said, he puts his hand on my leg. And he kind of comes close to, you know. I mean, I'm an 11-year-old girl, right? And that was the last time I ever got to go to a ball game. Because my mother was brave enough to come to me and to admit that she had been molested by him, that he had molested other women in the family, and that it was not going to carry on for one more generation. When I was 14, I went to my best friend's house because, you know, that's what you do. You go and you hang out with your friends, right? Her father had called and asked me to come over. I didn't think anything of it. I presumed she was there, right next door, across the back alley from my house. He was a colonel in the United States Air Force. None of us thought anything of it until I walked into that living room, and he was sitting there in a bathrobe and nothing else on the couch, with his leg propped up so that I could see all of God's glorious creation. I was 14. I was smart enough to stay on the other side of the room. I did not know what to do. It took me half an hour to extricate myself from that situation. And for half an hour, I could barely breathe. I was sweating. My heart was beating like a rabbit. Boom, 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 boom. Because I thought he was going to attack me. When I finally managed to get out, I ran home and I told my mother. And I never got to go to that house again, thanks be to God. We presumed that he was molesting his daughter and any other girl who went over there. But he was a colonel in the United States Air Force. And we didn't do anything. And I have no idea what else he ever did. In a time such as this, when we are hearing these stories, I was raped at 5 and again at 9 and at 17 and at 25. I read that one last night from a woman right here on this res. These stories are everywhere. The pain is everywhere. We need to listen, to comfort, to say, we believe you, and to seek justice. At a time such as this, we cannot stay silent. This is not just about women either. I want to make this clear, especially on a reservation, especially since so many of the ancestors had to go to those boarding schools where they were abused. This is about men as well. It's about anyone who has been violated. And it is about us taking a stand. We need to listen. We need to speak. We need to comfort. We need to believe. And we need to act, to seek justice. Because at a time such as this, if we don't do this, who will? Amen.